Okay, here we go. This is Meg Cox, and I'm conducting an interview with Alex Anderson for Quilters SOS Save Our Stories, a project of the Alliance for American Quilts. It is now 10:42 a.m. on Saturday, November 5th, and we're conducting this interview on the convention floor at Quilt Festival. Now, as usual, you've brought a touchstone quilt, you brought a special quilt, so why don't you tell us why you picked this one?
Why did I choose this quilt to bring today? I consider myself a traditional quilt maker, although I'm going into new venues, which is very, very exciting. But typically I've been known as the Star Lady and a hand quilter. So this particular quilt was made entirely by me. I didn't even have a celebrity stunt sewer do the binding. And it has machine piece stars, hand applique, and hand quilted.
What do you think someone seeing this quilt would think about you as a quilter?
What would I think if somebody were viewing this quilt of me as a quilt maker? I'm pretty simple-minded. I mean, it's a classic pattern, but it has a contemporary twist to it. You would know that this pattern of Rose of Sharon was not made 100 years ago. You would know that it has been made probably around the turn of the century. And I also love that it has hand dyes in it.
Attention, please, attendees. We remind you that food and drink is not allowed on the show floor. However, there is a complete food court in Hall A, also food stanchions on the second floor, and a restaurant on the third floor. And we remind you that tomorrow's new hours for Sunday are 10 a.m. to 4 p.m.
We'll get picked up and we'll... What do you do with this quilt? What is your plan for this quilt?
Okay, what do I do with this quilt? Most of my quilts are working quilts. This particular quilt was created for my book, Beautifully Quilted by Alex Anderson. And it was a book that was written to talk about how much I love designing quilting motifs. I studied under a woman named Lucy Hilty, who is no longer with us, but she was a driving heartbeat force in the San Francisco Bay Area. She was a Mennonite woman who didn't care much about creating the quilt top. She cared about creating the quilting designs. And I'm not sure if that was my 10th book, but it was a kind of in there. I knew that I had to document the lessons that Lucy taught me. For me, when the quilt is quilted, that's when the true soul is, I'm going to say a wrong word, breathed into the quilt. Is that correct English, Meg?
I'm not sure, but it sounds great to me.
Okay. The quilting to me is where it's happening, especially when you're sitting at the quilt frame. There's magic.
Alex, can you tell me your first quilt memory?
My first quilt memory. I can tell you what it is, but I don't remember it. My first quilt memory was brought to my attention about 10 years ago. There was a woman who lived next door to my mom and dad, and her name is Mrs. Kelly. And Mrs. Kelly was a multi-talented woman. And when I met up with her, you know, years later, when I was a little girl, I would come over and sit under her quilt frame. And for 8th grade graduation in high school, she gave me a silver thimble. Who would have ever guessed? I met up with her later, and she called me on the phone, and she said, she's a lawyer in the Monterey Bay Area, and she said, you're famous. And I said, and you're smart.
What age did you actually start quilt making?
Quilt making was started in 78. I was a student at San Francisco State University. My degree was in generic art with kind of heavy design influence. And 1 month prior to graduation, I found out I was a unit short. I had just done a paper on quilting at American folk tradition for a children's class I was in. So I went to my counselor and I said, if I do a quilt in this 1 month, will you give me the unit that I need to graduate? And she said, yes. So I called my grandmother, who had started a hand-pieced grandma's flower garden in the 1930s, and she was thrilled to send it off to me. I went and got cotton batting with seeds in it. I got Laura Ashley upholstery fabric for the backing. And this giganto quilt that I was going to do in 1 month ended up being the size of a bath mat. Grandma was profoundly disappointed, but despite all odds, a quilt maker was born.
That's wonderful. What about the second one? Did that take a while to get to?
The second quilt, no, because she asked, what about my second quilt? I was supposed to be a weaver for life, but I found my home at the quilt frame that my dad made for me from stolen lumber from the neighbor's yard. And every night I would just come and quilt, quilt, quilt. The second quilt was actually a quilt, an Amish quilt, that I made in Lucy Hilty's class, where I learned how to draw feathers and cables and all those beautiful motifs that we still love today.
Are there other quilt makers in your family other than your grandmother?
Are there other quilt makers in my family? Interestingly enough, I kind of think it skips generations, but I know on both sides the grandmothers dabbled in quilting. Not seriously, but after both grandparents had passed away, both sides, we found my grandmother's frame from one side in the attic of the other grandmother. And we gave it to a museum in Sister Bay, Wisconsin. And I'm kind of sad I didn't hang on to those four sticks, but I suppose it's better that it's where it really belongs. It's in Door County.
That's wonderful. So when did you start teaching?
So when did I start teaching quilt making? About 30 seconds after I started making quilts, because you see, I discovered it. I went to a church group, and I taught I don't even know what, and then I was keeping one step ahead of what the students wanted. And if somebody wants to teach quilt making, I say it's great. Find a group of people who want to learn and just share your knowledge.
So what was the class?
So what was the class that I taught? I haven't a clue.
But then you went from that onto television. Can you talk
so about that? There's a giant leap between when I started quilt making to when I got on television. There was a lot of teaching that went on. I taught at Cotton Patch in Lafayette, California, an empty spools store in Alamo, California, and I had the opportunity to put my quilts in other people's books. The first quilt that I have published was in Quilts, Quilts, Quilts by Diana McClun and Laura Nouns, and it was a star quilt on black background, solid fabrics. And that was a light bulb moment for me, because at the time in the San Francisco Bay Area, there was a war between art quilters and traditional quilters, and it was really ugly. And I wanted to be with the cool guys that were the art quilters, but I kept finding myself drawn to the traditional medium. And Diana saw that quilt of mine, this simple sawtooth star quilt, and said, can we have it for our first book? And that was a light bulb moment for me, because I realized it doesn't matter whether you're traditional, whether you're art, or you don't even know where you fit in. All that's important is that you are a quilter. So I was kind of a generic quilter, teaching stars and how to draw the motifs and all that. And I was down at a show, Road to California, put on by Carolyn Reese in Southern California, and I was approached by Stephanie Kleinman, who worked for Weller Grossman Productions, and she came into my class, and she wanted to know would I be interested in hosting a television show. And I said, I can't talk right now. I'm teaching a class. Let's meet at lunch. So we couldn't find a private place until we scored a bus bench, kind of like Forrest Gump, and we had ourselves a conversation. I really was not interested in being on television. I just wanted to be able to be a professional quilter. So I said, let me think about this. And I flew home that night, and John was in the kitchen fixing something that might look like a dinner. And my kids were watching television. At the time, my son was probably early high school, my daughter junior high, pre-junior high. And I walked in the house and I said, "You aren't going to believe this. Somebody wants me to do a television show." And it's the first time my kids ever cared what I did for a living. All of a sudden, quilting was becoming important. And I remember walking through the family room to the kitchen, and I looked at my husband, John, and I said, "I don't want to do this." And he looked at me, and he said, "I've never seen you back away from anything. I've seen you make 20 quilts for a book, for books in 3 months. I've seen you meet every single challenge." And he said, "When you're an old lady in the old people's home, sitting on the front porch trying to teach the lady next to you how to quilt, you're going to be very sorry that you missed this opportunity." So it was through my husband's encouragement that I went forward.
Could you,
Meg? That makes me want to weep right now.
We got the Kleenex. Don't worry. Yeah. Can you tell? We'll switch channels then. Can you tell me about an amusing experience that occurred during your quilting or your teaching of quilting?
Oh, an amusing experience that's happened during my quilting. What isn't great about this industry? I will just say what's so amusing is that this is the universe's joke that I've been able to write all these books and have a TV show because I graduated with C minuses from Livermore High School.
Ooh,
that's the joke.
What do you find pleasing about making quilts?
What do I find pleasing about making quilts? I knew you'd ask a question kind of like that, and so I'm going to preface it differently, and then you can re-ask it if I don't answer it. I have found that in quilt making, there are certain things that really have made a difference to me along the way. In the beginning, it was when I had my first sewing room, and we took the bed out, and it was all mine. That was really a wonderful moment. I remember when I got my first Bernina. I mean, we didn't have money. We didn't have money at all. I borrowed the money from my dad. I remember when I was first published in Diana's book, in Laura's book, and the journey has continued to amaze me. I remember when I could go into a quilt shop and not have to worry if I could feed my family and be able to spend $25 on fabric. But now, the thing that is so pleasing to me about quilting are the people. And that's why I love what you're doing here with SOS, because we are an incredible community, and I don't think there's anything else quite like it on the planet. So to me, it's the people now.
Would you talk a little bit about techniques? Now, you are, you know, the queen of hand quilting, but can you talk a little bit about your journey in terms of technique and material?
Okay, as far as my journey of technique, I did start out as a traditional quilt maker, loved the hand quilting, fell into the star lady, and that was actually because in Diana and Laura's book, Quilts, 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 that wasn't really included in the sampler. My journey has taken a really abrupt turn lately, and it's very interesting to watch because I don't know where I'm going, but I know I'm doing something a little bit different. And at this point, my journey is taking me away from teaching and putting me back into the student role. Right now, on my frame at home, I have a silk dupiani silk that's very arty, kind of like my quilt for the Alzheimer's movement for Ami Sims. It's full size, and yet it's hand quilted, so it's kind of like taking the old and integrating the new to it. And I think that's one of the things we love about quilting, is that it's not a journey that has an end. The more I know, the less I know, and I think that's what continues to make this so exciting.
How has technology influenced your quilting?
How has technology influenced my quilting? A lot. I've learned things in the last 5 years that I didn't know my brain could even process, And I think technology, the thing is the internet. We are now connecting quilters worldwide. I have had the delicious pleasure of being in Africa this last year and meeting with a guild of which it was the first generation of quilters. I had the opportunity to go to Costa Rica and meet with the first generation of quilters. And the internet, I think, is taking our community and just reaching it so far out there, and yet it's making our community smaller and smaller and smaller. So I also think digital photography is something else that's really important. I was trying to put together something, and I went back to try to find college pictures of me, and they just simply didn't exist because I didn't have the money to process the film. And now with digital photography, you have people here from all over the world snapping away their heart's content, and then they can go to wherever they live and share these pictures either in person or on the internet. So I think digital photography is a big deal.
So you mentioned the silk dupiani. So would you say that the materials and the techniques that you're using are different now?
I mentioned that I'm working with strike that from the record, please. Silk dupiani. And do I think that globally, techniques and all that are changing? Oh, definitely. I look here. This is on video or on audio, but across the way I'm looking at a quilt that is just covered with crystals, you know, and it's changing at a very rapid speed. I think the rules have all been broken or open, and there's not the way that those of you that perhaps started quilting 30 years ago, if you didn't do it the way that teacher said, you might end up in jail. I'll join you there.
Yeah. Would you describe your studio now, the place where you do your quilting?
I love my studio where I'm working now. My first studio, I even have a hard time saying that because it sounds so important and it's just my playground. My first studio was an extra bedroom with a bed in it, a guest room. And it was after taking a class from Nancy Crowe, I came home to my husband and I said, you know, you're right. This needs to stay the guest bedroom. I'm going to move into the living room and claim that as my own. And the bed was out the next day. So that was my first studio. The second studio, it was in Pinole, California. We purchased a second house, moved, and it was downstairs and it was quite large. It was long and skinny, but it was large. But then we had to move to Livermore, California, where I was raised, and the real estate was a little bit more expensive. And so my studio became the largest extra bedroom, the kitchen, and the laundry room. My first book was written in the laundry room. So I thought we needed to move, but my dad said, look, you've got some space right behind the house here. You could add on. And so I went and visited other quilt makers' studios, Yvonne Porcella, Freddie Moran, to name some of the people you might be familiar with, and I made a list of the things that I wanted. And then I went to an architect, and I said it had to be under 500 square feet, because at 500 square feet, we had to pay more taxes. So my studio is 498 square feet, and it's pushed to the back of the house through my daughter's bedroom, which is now my office. And I'm so glad I had other people look at the plans. It is the place where you will find me, even if I'm painting my fingernails. I love that spot.
That's great. With everything that you do, do you find it hard to balance your schedule? Do you have trouble finding enough time for quilting, but is that a special difficulty?
With everything I do I have time to balance my quilting time? Yes, it's very, very difficult, but I do quilt. My mom calls my studio, not my sewing room, the factory, because she'll come back there and see me sewing, but in the end, when the day's over and I'm done writing articles for the magazine or working on the website or traveling, being here with you and my friends and family, I find that at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, that's where you might just find me sitting at the quilt frame. I've just now put another quilt on the frame. It's been a long time, and I have vowed that I will always have a quilt on the frame because that's where I get centered. I've got to have that to go to, and it's been a long time since I've made that promise to myself.
That's great. What about machine quilting? Do you do much of that?
Machine quilting. Yes, I've learned to machine quilt, and I think it's really exciting that there's something that you don't know how to do. I think it's important to learn to do it because I feel as quilt makers we have a tool belt, and every technique and tip that you learn can go into that tool belt and you can pull it out when you need it. So yes, I really like machine quilting, but I will tell you this. I also know I have X amount of time, back to the time thing, and if I can pay somebody to do something better than I will do that, and I will give them credit, too. For instance, we have the things we love and the things we don't like. I really don't like binding quilts, so I bind by checkbook. It's a matter of...
Except for this quilt.
And now, this one I did it all. It's a matter of surrounding yourself with the people that love to do the things you hate, and then you love to do the things they hate, and that's how we all get along, right?
Tell me this, did you ever use quilting to get through a difficult time in your life?
Oh, did I ever use quilting to get through a difficult time in my life? I'll bet that's when Carol started crying.
Most people.
That's a very good question. For me, it was very difficult on 9/11. I was separated from my children and my husband. I was in Door County, Wisconsin with my mom and dad. I was to fly home and host a quilt show at Quilting in the Garden at Alden Lane in Livermore, California, an outdoor quilt show. And we packed up a pickup truck and drove cross country. The pickup truck had jump seats in the back. So this was kind of amazing to do this with your 80-year-old parents. And I was horrified being separated from my children and John. And when I got home, all the quilters started making quilts. And if you can remember, Houston International Quilt Festival was, you know, what, a month and a half later, and there was an aisle that went all the way down the length of the convention center with quilts on both sides, with people responding to this horrific situation that had happened in the United States. I went to my sewing machine, and I was paralyzed.
Really?
I couldn't sew. All I could do was pick up and do red work. For me, the opposite happens. And that was an extremely interesting situation when I could come to Quilt Festival and Market and see what people had done, and I retreated.
How long did it take before you sort of thawed out?
How long did it take before I could get back in the groove? Probably about 6 months. And I will also say, too, that after I had each child, well, let's start with Joey, who's my oldest, I lost my creativity for a year. Mm-hmm. And I have warned other pregnant women that you can do, this might happen to you, and don't freak out because you'll get your groove back on. And so when my daughter then was born, I gave myself permission to not be creative for a year. Opposite of the pack.
What do you think makes a great quilt?
What do I think makes a great quilt? Wow. I don't think I can define that because a great quilt might be the best of show. It might be something that documents something. Or it might be Katie's quilt, a young woman who is my daughter's best friend and or one of her very good friends. And 2 years ago, Katie came to me, age 26, and said, I want to make a t-shirt quilt. Or no, first it was, will you make me a t-shirt quilt? No. So we had a quilt day at my house where my daughter and Katie made t-shirt quilts from their college, St. Mary's. And at the very end, I looked at Katie and I said, so what's your next quilt going to be? And she goes, well, I've decided it's going to be a rail fence. And that t-shirt quilt is the most important quilt. And what was really great, I have a little bit of goosebumps going on here. 4th of July, this last 4th of July, she's been quilting a year and a half, and she comes up to me and she goes, "Guess what?" And I said, "What?" And she said, "I taught the lady who lives above me how to quilt." That t-shirt quilt is a great quilt.
I totally agree. What makes a quilt appropriate for a museum, would you say?
Oh, what makes a quilt appropriate for a museum? You know, I don't know. And I do know I'm really impressed that Yvonne Percella got the San Jose Quilt and Textile Museum to accept her work. Because, you know, 100 years from now, who knows where these quilts are going to be. I do know that probably my quilts are not appropriate for museums. But, you know, it's probably the masters and their quilts.
So among quilters out there in any kind of genre or style, whose work are you drawn to in particular?
Okay, so whose work am I drawn to in particular? I don't think I have a clear answer on that. I really don't think I have a clear answer on that because I like the diversity is just incredible, and I love everything from the antique quilts. I love the new things. I just kind of love them all.
Whose work has influenced you, whether it is a quilter or another type of artist?
What quilter has influenced me? One of the great things about being a professional quilt teacher and traveling is that everywhere you go, you are influenced by what's going on in that area. And then you're the lucky one that gets to go sprinkle the fairy dust in another area. But I do have a story. About 4 or 5 years ago, Jean Wells, who owns the Stitch and Post in Sisters, Oregon, and who I consider a very good friend, called and asked me to teach. She has retreats that are not during the outdoor quilt show. And I said, you know, Jean, why don't we co-teach a class together? And I can't believe I'm telling this story. And she had just started a whole thing with opening your creativity, design, color, and all that. And I had just discovered a couple cool techniques. And so she said, let's co-teach a class together. And so I flew up there. She put me up in a wonderful facility. And we co-taught for 2 or 3 days. And what was happening during that magical 3-day class was that she was profoundly influencing a new direction I was going to take. So that was kind of a light bulb moment, and the best part was that I got paid after for teaching.
Why is quilt making important to your life?
Why is quilt making important to my life? When I discovered quilt making, I am an artistic person. I'm not an A-plus artistic person, but my parents are artistic in their own way. My father is a woodworker. My mother lives a very artistic lifestyle, meaning she can come in and arrange my furniture, hang the pictures. She lives beautifully. And I dabbled in all the textiles. In fact, we even found a picture of me sewing at my grandmother's knee at about age 5, stitching. At the other grandmother's knee at probably the same summer, knitting didn't stick, but stitching did. I started sewing in about 5th grade. My 8th grade graduation present with Mrs. Kelly's silver thimble was a sewing machine. And then I learned bobbin lace in college. I learned crochet, all the wonderful different avenues of art. But when I sat down at that quilt frame, completed that first quilt, graduated, and then sat down again, it's like yesterday, I found my home. And it was just as clear as could be. That's where I belonged.
Can you try and analyze that or tease that out at all about what is it about that lasted when the others didn't?
Yeah, what is it about quilt making that made it stick? I really don't know what's made it stick. I do know that you can control it, and unlike woodworking, which I've done, I've actually made my children's cradle, and it ended up in a fine woodworking annual catalog. You can you make a mistake and you can't pull it and squish it and get it back together. There's forgiveness in quilting. And also, when you create a quilt, in your mind, you have an idea of what it's going to look like or the direction you're going to go. But like children, they take on their own life. And so it's kind of an interesting, evolving journey that just continues. And I want to reiterate that I am taking classes now. I am a student. And so even at 33 years, I think that's how long I've been quilting, I realize there's a whole genre out there of things I want to learn.
Now, you are nationally and internationally known, but do you feel that your quilts at all are representative of your region or come out of your community in some way?
I'm internationally and nationally known, and do I feel that my quilts are could be regionally identified?
Yeah, or reflect your community in some
way. Or reflect my community. Yeah. That's a tough question because in the San Francisco Bay Area, there's a lot of stuff going on. And so I guess my quilts do have a look to them, but in our area we have been very, very lucky because we've had Roberta Horton, Mary Mashuda, Diana McClun, Freddie Moran, Judy Matheson, Gay Perry, and I don't want to skip anybody, but we are in a really wonderful area of the United States to be in, so I'm not even sure that you could really tack anything.
What do you think the importance of quilts in American life?
What do I think the importance of quilts is in the American life? Well, I do think that it's one of the crafts that is uniquely identified with us. I own quilts that were brought, that were family pieces. I don't know who exactly brought them over, and gratefully they're in our hands. But when I go to places like Costa Rica, like I mentioned, in its first generation, I mean, here we have the delicious history of generation after generation after generation after generation. And so I think that's why it's so important. And I also think that quilting has documented events in our history, like the Civil War quilts, like the Underground Railroad, like 9/11, as no other media has. Medium.
I'm curious, what happens to your quilts? Obviously, you make them for magazines, but I'm sure you make them for family and friends. What happens to your
quilts? What happens to my quilts? Do I make them for family and friends? Not really. I have what I call my important quilts, the ones that I know the kids will fight over. And then I have the quilts that are earning myself a living. Yes, I made my son and his wife a wedding quilt because I knew everybody would talk badly about me if I didn't. And I'm making one for my daughter who is getting married on New Year's Eve. But I have these quilts, and some of them are like the ones the kids are going to fight over. Some are pretty good, some are okay, and some are horrible. So right now I'm trying to decide what to do. The ones that are horrible, I will probably give to a shelter. I'm in a cleaning mode. I don't even want my name attached to them. Then I have the working quilts, and what I'm doing with those are after they're done earning a living, and they're good quilts, I am now parceling them out. For instance, after Katrina, I put up a thing on my website, if you gave any amount of money to the American Red Cross, your name would go in a hat, and somebody would win this quilt, and I think we raised like about $14,000. For the Japan tsunami earthquake, Ricky Timms gave a free pass to one of his retreats, and I threw in a quilt, good quilt, and we made $35,000 for the American Red Cross. But I'm still not getting rid of these quilts fast enough. So this is the latest plan, and I'm telling you this because Marianne Fons told me this. For my daughter's wedding, I'm going to have a bridesmaid shower, and I'm going to give each bridesmaid a quilt and then let them fight over them. Kind of like one of those things called a white elephant thing. So I'm going to hang on to the important quilts to share to help earn my living. And then the good quilts that really aren't helping, I'm going to start getting rid of. It's time to let them go.
What do you think is the biggest challenge confronting quilt makers today.
What is the biggest challenge confronting quilt makers today? A couple years ago, we would have said bringing in new quilt, younger quilt makers, but I'm thrilled about the Modern Quilt Guild. They're doing their own thing. At Quilt Market, you saw all these young women, and I see them facing the struggles that I faced as a young mom, being a quilt maker. I would say right now in history, right now, it would be the socioeconomic issues and quilt shops having to close down. But I think our industry, despite what's all going on in the world, is relatively alive and healthy. And if all of us commit to bring in one quilt maker, just one quilt maker, then that quilt maker is going to pass her fairy dust onto somebody else, just like my Katie Koontz.
To kind of wrap things up, Alex, how will you be remembered as a quilter?
How will I be remembered as a quilter? The good news is I'm on the internet now with Ricky Timms at thequiltshow.com because it's really who I am. I had a persona that was dictated by Home and Garden Television that I needed to be, and that's really not who I am. I'm a little bit, have a little bit of a wild side, if anybody knows me. I hope how I am remembered is somebody that opened the door of quilt making to another person. And by the magic of me having to fall into that television opportunity, I was blessed that particular incident. It will not be for my quilt making skills.
Is there any question that I didn't ask that you wanted to...
That I want to answer? No, but thank you for not asking my weight or age.
Okay, this is Meg Cox, and I want to give a great big thank you to Alex Anderson for doing this interview today and doing it on the festival floor. We don't usually do these things in a big public setting. And we are concluding the interview at 11:18 a.m., and thank you very much.
Now, I want to say to you people before you leave, this is a really important thing that is happening here. We had a thing called Quilt Days back in the 80s where states would document quilts that were coming in and we were collecting history like that. It was fairly unorganized. And I know how much I appreciate the quilts of the 1800s and even the turn of the century, and we simply do not have the information on it. And what is going on now in our community is seriously profound and important. And so if you would be willing to donate money to this so they can continue their cause, if you would be willing to be an interviewer, I want to throw this in off the record, that my daughter, who's getting married to Jerry, I found out Jerry's grandmother is a quilter and is interviewing people, Save Our Stories, happened to interview Mary Kay Davis, who works with us at thequiltshow.com. So this is a very, very important thing that this organization is doing, and we must support them and help spread the word. I want to hear amen, sister.
Amen, sister. Okay, I'm going to give you a chance to ask Alex a couple of questions, but just a little bit of business here.
I'll give you the microphone.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So you're not yelling.
We're going to open it up for just a little bit for a couple questions, but I just want to get a little bit of business done. As Alex said, we're...